How are you?
I'm good. It's a different time of the year, isn't it?
Well, it definitely is. You know that we've had this discussion about too much stick work, which kind of, I have to say, it kind of dissipated. I thought it dissipated, and now it's back. Or is it just playoff hockey, Pierre?
Well, I think it's just that matchup. It's just Kessler versus Johansson. That's going to be something to watch as you go forward here. Like you and like probably a lot of the listeners, I watched both games Friday and obviously yesterday. And Ryan Kessler is a player that every team in the league would covet. And, you know, when you and I were growing up, we had the chance to watch Doug Risebrough and Mario Tremblay play. And they weren't fun to play against, but they got the home team a lot of wins. And they drove star players nuts, I think you would agree. And that's what Kessler is really good at. There are not a lot of guys like that in the league, by the way. Bergeron does it a certain way, but not like Kessler does. Kopitar does it a certain way, but not the way Kessler does. Taves does it a certain way, but not like Kessler. Pagel in Ottawa does it a certain way, but not like Kessler. He's a different dude.
You know what Kessler...
He's a really different dude, I'm telling you.
The effective centerman of the past that he most reminds me of, even though he's built differently, is Dale Hunter.
Very similar. Very similar to Dale Hunter. The one difference is that this guy can air it out. He can really boogie up and down the ice. Dale Hunter couldn't skate like that. He just couldn't. Right. And I coached a lot of games where Dale was involved, and we had Mario Lemieux, and we had Ronnie Francis, and they had to go head-to-head with him. And Dale was really good when the red line was in, and Dale was really good in confined areas, but Dale couldn't skate like him. That's the only difference. Dale was really effective.
Carey Fraser earlier today with Knuckles Nylund and Sean Campbell on Off the Cuff.
Well, you know what? I think Kessler is getting some free passes for sure. We know the style that he plays. You got to like him. You got to love him on your team. But you hate to play against a guy like this because he is given a free rein here in the playoffs.
Do you agree with that?
A little bit, but here's what I think happened yesterday. A lot of people think that Ryan Johansson's, you know, verbal outburst yesterday post-game was because Kessler's in his head. I don't agree with that. I think it's different. Knowing the coaching staff there, I think they're planting a seed for the officials going into Game 3 in Nashville. I also think they're planting a seed for the fans in Nashville. They need to have an enemy. Their fan bases are really good when they have an enemy. And this will be enemy number one. They'll be on him hard. And the referees will be on notice. So I'm with Carey Fraser. I agree with that. He's gotten away with some stuff, not a ton, but that's how he plays because it's playoff hockey. And he, you know what's the best part about Kessler, if you have him on your team? He knows how to adjust. He knows how to take it just to the edge and then back off. He really does. He's amazing that way.
The temperament of the game changes. And when you play aggressive teams, that element is a detractor to allowing the other team to feel that they can take liberties on our players. And you guys have witnessed the games. They're very physical and they're very high-paced.
Randy Carla, I think that was in response specifically to a question of having Jared Bull in the lineup. And Pierre, yeah. People, you know, we all marvel at the talent on the back end of Nashville and talent throughout the lineup, but as you have pointed out, they're also a very physical team.
Oh, they're not. I told you this a couple days ago. I told you over the last couple rounds, they're not a shrinking violet by any stretch of the imagination. Cody McLeod's a nasty piece of business. Mike Fisher's not exactly a nice guy to play against. He's a brilliant person, but not a fun guy to play against. And you can go around their roster. They got some nasty guys there. I respect their team. Their team is fantastic. This is going to be a great series. Now, if Anaheim doesn't win yesterday, and I'm a little surprised Nashville let them off the hook, but if Nashville doesn't win, if Anaheim doesn't win yesterday, that's going to be 4-0. Just telling you, that series would have been 4-0. But they won. Now they got a series. Then now they legitimately have a series there.
Pierre, what have you made by the way Randy Carlyle is constantly adjusting his lines? Last night it was Andres Kasha. He gets moved up to play with Richie and Getzlaff. Kasha scores. Richie gets a goal. Just wondering how you think he's been able to use different guys in different spots throughout the playoffs, basically.
He's been great. Randy, you can just see he's an experienced coach who really has learned a lot, like John Tortorella, that when you're coaching in this era, you got to change a little bit. You can't be as draconian and tough and as vicious as maybe you were in the old days. And that's not that long ago, the old days, but maybe 10 years ago. So So I think he's learned, and I think he's really manufactured a really solid roster for them, Mitch Gallo. But the thing to me yesterday, you could see he was ticked off after Corey Perry took a bad penalty at the end of the first period. You could tell he was ticked off and that Corey Perry was going to be in trouble. You could just tell that Corey Perry was going to be in big trouble, and that's what eventually happened. He was. He didn't play nearly as much.
You don't ever want to start two down. And so we, you know, we battled hard to get that win tonight, and it's good. But it's, again, it's another win. We got to get four before they do, so it doesn't matter which ones you win.
Ryan Getzlaff on the tough start. And I know there are a lot of people out there who study these trends that will tell you that once a player hits 27 or 28, he starts to lose effectiveness. There are exceptions, of course. And Ryan Getzlaff is 32, Pierre. I've watched almost his entire career. This is as good as he's played.
Agreed. He is as motivated as I've ever seen him. The one thing most people that follow those trends don't know, he's probably as good an athlete that has ever been born in the city of Regina in Saskatchewan. You talk to anybody that was there when he was a kid growing up, whether it was baseball, whether it was football, obviously everybody I think that follows the CFL knows how great a wide receiver or a slot back his brother was and still is potentially. But you talk, this guy's an amazing athlete, so he's going to have a longer shelf life. That's where scouting matters. You got to know just where he was athletically as a kid and how that's translated to where he is now as a professional hockey player. So I'm not surprised. He's part of the best draft in the history of the NHL. The 03 draft is the best draft in the history. A lot of people will tell you 79. 79 didn't produce as many guys that are still ripping it up as 2003 did. 2003 draft is insane.
Andre Kostitsyn.
Well, you know, Hugh Jessamyn. There's exceptions to every rule. But look at some of the other guys. Joe Pavelski was 205th in that draft. Dustin Byfuglien, I think, was 260-something in that draft. You can go down. That draft is insane.
Yeah, and the first round plus is incredible for the talent
well,
that was drafted.
Was in that draft. Kessler was in that 2003 draft. So was Corey Perry in that 2003 draft. Go look at Jeff Carter. I can go down the line. I mean, Mark Darnley Fleury's still playing. He was a first overall pick. You know, you go down and look at that draft. That 03 draft's insane.
Pierre, before we get to where you are, Pittsburgh and Ottawa, I had the pleasure of chatting with, Red Berenson between 4 and 4:30. He just retired after, 30-plus years at Michigan. That's how a lot of hockey people know him, of course. He was a great player in the NHL for a long time. And he was the coach of the year with the St. Louis Blues, if people don't remember. And then he got fired, as he pointed out, the next year. He was an assistant with Scotty Bowman in Buffalo for a couple of years. Rod asked him specifically about coaching.
Yeah, I think there was a time when coaching was motivation and discipline and maybe even intimidation, you know, from the old school style of coaching. And then I think it became more of a teaching job where you're teaching players and teaching more systems and to the point where it's just about overcoached. And I've always felt like there's kind of a middle of the road. You've got to let players do what they're good at and not overcoach them, particularly the skilled players.
That requires a ding, 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 I think, at that point.
Isn't that brilliant? Yep. That's just so great. That's so nice to hear, Red. First of all, one of the biggest heartbreaks of my college coaching career is I recruited a player by the name of Brian Wiseman, who was one of the top point producers in Tier 2 junior hockey in Ontario ever. Played for the Chatham Micmacs back in those days. The goalie on his team was a guy named Steve Shields. Remember Steve?
Sure.
Played
yeah.
in the NHL? Sure, that was his goalie then. But anyways, I'll never forget why it came down to Michigan and St. Lawrence for Brian Wiseman. And Wiseman called me up, and he was great. And he said, you know what, Coach, I'm sorry. I'm going to choose the University of Michigan. And obviously he understood. It was right near where he grew up, and it's father, who's a postal worker at the time for Canada Post, could go see him play a lot more. I totally understood, but I remember seeing Red the next time I was at a rink trying to recruit, and one of his assistants was Mel Pearson saying, yeah, we got the Wiseman kid. It was pretty tough. He made it tough on us. I was like, oh, I was so angry. Wiseman went on to have a great career at Michigan, and you know what? I believe he's still coaching there. He's going to be working with Mel Pearson, who's the new head coach at the University of Michigan. So good, all good stuff, but Red was a living legend in college hockey and even in pro hockey, and I know how much Scotty Bowman really respects Red Berenson.
Well, his name came up, Scotty's name came up a couple of times. I think it goes both ways. Rod?
Mm-hmm. You've told us many times and for many years now the importance of creating a role for a player, Pierre, and Coach Berenson referenced that as well, to the point where in 2017, if you're a coach, you basically can't afford to waste a roster spot on a player that doesn't feel useful. Right, like if it's not working, you've got to move on, send him down, cut the player, get someone else. If not, if he's on your roster, you've got to find a role for him. It's incumbent upon the coach, is it not?
Yeah, absolutely. The biggest thing for a coaching staff in the league today, and I love what Coach Berenson said in terms of educating players, you always have to do it even at the NHL level, but you got to let your offensive guys run. But the guys that you really need to create the roles for, the depth players, if they choose not to accept the role, you got to cut bait. You got to just say, sorry, this isn't working. And you got to have an open relationship and a transparent relationship with the general manager. And hopefully he can just say, you know what, this isn't working, kind of move on. And if you can't do that, you're doomed to failure, Rod. I love how you asked the question because I completely agree with you. And I'll use Chris Neal as an example with Ottawa. He has not pouted once. He played 2 minutes in one game and like a minute and 30 seconds in another game. I watched him practice today with a young kid out of Boston College and Colin White. And it was almost as if Chris Neal was an extension of the Ottawa Senators coaching staff. I was the only person in the stands, by the way, watching it because everybody else was at Mike Sullivan's press conference. But just watching Chris Neal work with this kid, it was awesome. So he's accepted his role as being a mentor. And that's
he'll tuck it in. He'll go up in the rush. Ron Hainsey absorbs a hit from Mark Mathot. He's taken down. Now Kunitz right out in front. They score! Kenny Malkin breaks the ice. Well, Ron Hainsey makes this play. He chips it in. He goes and gets it. This is Kunitz's 149th playoff game. And what a nice play getting that puck to Malkin with a slick little redirection. Schultz along the boards, pinned there. Bobby Ryan with some open ice. Here he comes. Ryan's in. He scores! Bobby Ryan wins it in overtime!
He gets in 1-on-0 on the goalie like that. He's one of the most deadly players in the league. I mean, you see him in the shootouts. And but to go with that, I mean, if he's not shooting the puck, he's a heck of a passer. And he knows how to create space with his body. And he's been doing that the whole playoff. He plays a big game down low. And you know, just a huge goal for us.
I don't know how they approach the game. That's not really my concern. My concern is our team. And so, you know, that's where our focus is.
Clark MacArthur of Ottawa on Bobby Ryan and Mike Sullivan, that coaches conference that Pierre just alluded to. Pierre McGuire is in Pittsburgh. Talk about salvaging a season, huh? This is Bobby Ryan at his best.
Couldn't happen to a nicer young man. I'm telling you, you know, people... revisionist history, he was the number two player in the 05 draft right behind Sidney Crosby. And when Anaheim took him, I know that Brian Burke was, you know, obviously excited to get him, but he wanted the top prize, Crosby. Everybody did. It's kind of like Jack Eichel and Connor McDavid. You couldn't go wrong with either guy. And Bobby Ryan had some amazing years in Anaheim, especially, you know, when he was playing on a line with Corey Perry and Ryan Getzlaf, two guys we've already talked about. But Mitch, I got to tell you, I've known Bobby a real long time, going back to when he was a kid and about to go into the Ontario Hockey League with Owen Sound Attack. This is the happiest I've ever seen him. I'm telling you, the happiest I've ever seen him. He told me during the game after he rattled one off the post, he goes, I got to score there, and I'm going to score there. I'm going to score eventually. So he told me during the game. I mean, I was flabbergasted, and then I asked him about it on the bench after the game in an interview.
Yeah, we're going to go out with that interview.
Yeah, but he's amazing. I'm telling you, I've never seen him happy. Now, for the fans that don't know, he's playing with a heavy heart. His mother passed away this past year and hasn't been easy for him, has not been easy for him at all.
Yeah, and his mother, her background she had a tough life.
Yes, very, very tough. So did he.
No kidding. So when we hear Mike Sullivan say what he did, like it's one thing to know that you're about to walk into an opponent that is going to try to turn the neutral zone into quicksand. It's another thing to actually play against it. How much easier is it to adjust once you've seen it firsthand as opposed to just in theory what you're facing?
It should be a lot easier for them. Doesn't mean it will be very easy, but it should be easier for them. I'm never going to disrespect the Ottawa Senators. I know I told you way before the playoffs started, they were my dark horse team, and I'm staying with it because I think they're group that believes in one another, and the coaching message has definitely resonated with the players. At the beginning of the year, they were having a hard time accepting the coaching methods. It hasn't been a problem now, so I think that's really positive for them. But I think for Pittsburgh, Mitch, it becomes a little easier just because they will have practice. I know yesterday they practiced doing that and beating the 1-3-1 or the 1-4, because people are just calling it the 1-3-1. I can tell you, there's two different methods to their neutral zone approach. One is a 1-3-1, clearly, and the other is a 1-4 delay, which is something we were playing a long time ago in Pittsburgh. So they're two different things, and that's what causes some of the problems for some of the people attacking Ottawa.
I think they're well coached, good players, they're experienced. To say that they couldn't reload and get ready for us would be undermining what they are and who they are, so I certainly won't do that.
Well, they're just tight to the neutral zone. They want to slow you down, so I thought we got some pretty decent zone time. We just got to find a way to create even more chances, but, I mean, they were there. I think we hit at least three posts, and, you know, there were some good looks there. So, you know, they're not going to give you anything, but I thought we worked hard to get our chances, and we got to bury them when we get them.
I don't know. So much has been strange about this postseason, but it would be strange, I think, for Pittsburgh to head to Ottawa down 0-2.
Yeah, but you never know. One never knows. The one thing I would say is I would expect a more urgent Pittsburgh team. I do think there was a little bit of a letdown from their series with Washington, and I asked Mike Sullivan that during my interview with him in the first period in the second TV timeout about, you know, Columbus is a natural rival. Washington's a natural rival. Ottawa-Pittsburgh's not a rivalry. It's not. How do you develop animosity and angst in a playoff series? Well, I think now you have it if you're Pittsburgh, just because you're facing a very difficult situation if you're going up there down 0-2. So I think you'll see a different Pittsburgh team tonight.
All right. Just before we let you go and go out with that Bobby Ryan chat after the win, Frank Saravelli of TSN reporting today that Todd Reirden, associate coach with Washington, is also now part of the head coaching search for Dale Tallon in Florida. We know that Jimmy Montgomery has interviewed a couple of times. We know that Michel Therrien has interviewed a couple of times. There might be interest in Phil Housley. What do you think? I know you think very highly of Phil Housley, but, man, just every time I look at that bench during the play or during a face-off and he's talking to his defenseman, I'm thinking, man, that maybe he's a perfect assistant coach.
Maybe, but I think Phil is a really good head coach. If you go back to the 2013 World Junior, he was a head coach at Team USA. To go overseas and win gold is really tough. To go overseas and win gold in Russia in the middle of the Ural Mountains is even tougher. And I think that speaks to Phil's ability as a head coach. And plus, again, Red Berenson and Scotty Bowman, he had some pretty amazing mentors as a young player growing up when he was playing in Buffalo in particular. Gilbert Perreault, who I'm a huge fan of, was another one of his mentors. So, I mean, I look at some of the body of work that he's been a part of, and Phil's had some amazing, amazing mentors. I think he's good. Todd Reirden's really good. Todd Reirden's really good. Todd Reirden has learned, and the guy that really taught him a lot, this will be a foreign name to a lot of fans, Jerry York, who's got more college coaching wins than anybody else in U.S. college hockey.
Down in Boston.
At Boston College, exactly right. He brought Mike Matheson from Montreal down to Boston College, and I would tell you this, that was a huge influence on Todd Reirden. I've known Todd since he was a young fella, and I had him at hockey camp, so I'm not surprised at how well he's doing it. I'm not surprised he's on the radar for Florida, and I know he will be on the radar for Buffalo as well.
Good to be able to watch you over the weekend. Wish we could again tonight. We'll talk about it tomorrow at 5:05.
I will be in Ottawa tomorrow, Mitch. I've not been in Ottawa for a very long time. Well, I've been there in the summertime, but I haven't been there for a hockey game, so I'm looking forward to that.
Thanks, Pierre.
Thanks a lot, Mitch.
Not your first piece of overtime magic. Take us through the goal first.
You know, we talked about it all night, just winning those little puck battles, and I came across the support. The guys found a good way to get it up there. From there, you're on a breakaway. I think I blacked out, but went in.
Earlier in the game, you told me you thought you should have scored on the one that you rattled off the post. Were you feeling it tonight, Bobby? Because it sure looked like you had a lot of jump.
Yeah, I think I did. I think I felt pretty good with the puck and my decision-making and all that, and I told you I should have scored there. I really should have won that one off the post, but I got to avenge it there in the third.
Your coach says it's you guys against the world. How legitimate is that rallying cry for your team?
Very. We feel like we're exactly what he said. Nobody's picking us, but we're consistent. We just stay to our game. we got a chance to get rattled there when they turned it or when they scored in the third, but we stuck with it, and here we are again with a 1-0 lead. We'll feel comfortable for about an hour and then get ready for the number two.
Speaking of another rallying guy, Craig Anderson, who was exceptional here in game one, everybody knows about, obviously, his situation at home with his wife, Nicole. How much has that affected your team?
You know, it's only made us better and stronger. It really has. Everybody was there for them. It's a trying year. They put a lot on their shoulders. Craig handled it so well, so mature. Nicole as well, and I know she's probably watching. We're still thinking about her every day, and we're playing for them.
We'll see you for game two on Monday night. All Thanks, right. Bobby.
Thank you, Pierre. My pleasure.
Yeah, Bobby Ryan will be in the studio whenever his career is over, or even before it's over. He is that good. Hockey Insider.